Perek Beis. We're in the middle of Perek Beis. We did the pasuk Hatzafoni. Okay, let's read the pasuk one more time very quickly. Pasuk Chaf, page 238. Perek Beis, pasuk Chaf, yes, Hatzafoni. Archik mi aleichem. Hashem says, I'm going to distance the Tzifoni. We learned yesterday two perushim. Either refers to the locust, or according to the Rashi, it refers to the Malchus of Ashur. They're called Tzafoin because he says they're on the northern side of Eretz Yisrael. Or the Barbanel says the Malchus refers to Rome. And
that first one is northeast, so he said that's where Rome is, the second part, El Yom Ha'achar.
Yom Ha'achar, okay, that's where they're going to go.
Because, the words that are to do with the word west, and Kadmoni is northeast.
Northeast and northwest.
Northeast and northwest. So one is Rome is the second.
Is the second. Aha. Saying the northeast refers to the Nebuchadnezzar.
Right.
The northwest is Rome. The northeast is Nebuchadnezzar. So the Koyim Barnell is a summary of both. This is a summary of both Perek Aleph and Perek Beis. Mm-hmm. It's a parak summary of both. Both very interesting. Okay. So again, either it's referring to Barnell learns that it's a summary of the one who destroyed the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni, which is Nebuchadnezzar and Rome, Edom. That's what we're calling here the Tzifoni. Or it refers to Rashi says the kingdom of Ashur. Or it refers to the locust. Or what we learned yesterday, Chaimus Hanoch, and Chazrashi also mentions this. It refers to the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is Tzafun. It's hidden inside. It's not loud enough.
No. I think the bottom is up.
The bottom is not loud enough. Okay, put it up. Put it up now. Is it better now? No, it's not on. It's not working all together.
Well, I'm saying this thing. Yeah.
Okay. Or it refers to the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is called the. No, it went dead again. It went dead again. It refers to the Yetzahar. The Yetzahar is called the Tzifoni. And Hashem is going to remove this. Hidachtiv Eleret Tziyah Ushmama. I will banish it into the land of Tziyah Ushmama. Desolation. Two words for desolation. Espanov El Hayom HaKadmoni. It's front section towards the eastern sea, which is, we learned yesterday in Farshim, refers simply at a very simple level to the Yam Melach, the Saifai, and the end, El Hayom Ho Acharoin, is the Mediterranean. We had discussed yesterday different ideas what this refers to. Mr. Axelrod, he told me, he says, the Pshat is, Yes, Hoser Satan Milifonenu Ome Acharenu. We say in Davening, may you remove the Satan from before us and from behind us. So that simply means that there are certain things that we're afraid of. The Satan is telling us to do certain things which are bad. And then later, when we do the Aveira, the Satan tries to bring upon us depression. So that's Me'acharav. That's the simple understanding of that Chazal. The Haser Satan Milifoneinu. Hashem prevent us, take away the Satan in front of us that's trying to persuade us to do new Aveiras. U'me'acharenu. And take away the Satan from behind us, who tells us after we do the Avera, it's too late for us to do Teshuvah. Teshuvah is never too late, even after the Satan is behind us. He already caused us to be Nichshol in Avera, and he tells us, that's it, you're finished, there's no hope for you. That's not true. Hashem, take away that Satan as well. A person can always do Teshuvah even after he does an Avera. So he suggested that's what the pasuk over here means as well. Since over here it says Hashem is going to take the Satan, the Tzifoni, the Yetzer, is going to banish it and drive it to the Yom HaKadmoni and to the Yom the Soifel El Yom HaAcharon. So the Panav refers to Milifonav. The Soifel refers to Satan Me'acharav. So it's still fine, good. I don't need more. Fine. Eshukach, thank you. Fine.
Interestingly enough, that's part of the Pshat on Altin Tzadi Karbe. Because then, in other words, the Satan is also trying to, in some ways, trying to make you, you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that, makes you tzadik harbe, and then you back yourself into a corner. I mean, that's the way my father always explained it to me. If you're going to be too frum, then you're going to get depressed when you can't live up to what you think you're supposed to do, and then you're going to go all the way to the other extreme. You eventually turn... You know, every time I used to come home and tell him you can't do this, you can't do this, he said, would say, be careful, because then when you don't do it, you're going to say, I did this already, I did this already. In other words, that's how the Satan is working on you, telling you, you can't do this, and you can't do this. That's what the message was, Alti Tzavi Karpe. Because that's part of what the Satan gets you to do. And then you go over the top. You do the what?
To the extremes.
So true, yeah. Yeah. So true.
Okay, then the pasuk concludes. The pasuk concludes. Then after Hashem banishes the satan, Hashem will drive the olav of vashoy, the sal tzachanasoy. It's stench. Two words. It's stench. Tzachanasoy. Two different words will come forward. Ki higdil asoy. We learn two different perushim. Either means that the satan has done magnificent things. The satan has done things that are more than it was permitted to do. Hashem created the satan, gave it permission to do its job, to entice a person to do an avera, but the satan is guilty because the satan exceeded its bounds. It went overboard in many different ways. We learned yesterday from the Chaim HaSanach, it went overboard by trying to use a technique to tell a person to do a mitzvah, which would then be used as a trick, as a trap, to do an avera, or the satan went and enticed the person more than it was permitted. That's the general rule. The general rule is the satan. The reason why the rishonim are going to be punished, even though there's a gezerah upon klal Yisrael, there has to be golos, there has to be different things, is because they went too far. They went too far, or the word that I really like better is not they went too far. They had enjoyment when they did it. Okay, that's really the thing. It's one day, the first kina on Tisha B'Av expressed that idea. In very great detail, that as we went into Galus, the Goyim, they stood and they were cheering, and they were insulting us, they were spitting on us. That is a revelation that the simcha they have in our tzaris is that this that they brought upon us tzaris. It's not because they were doing the will of Hashem. It's because they enjoyed it. One of the things that really shook me up the most, I don't know why, certain things, the little things that shake you up. Why? I don't know. But when I read that at one city, when the Jews were rounded up to be taken to Auschwitz on the cattle carts, they were goyim who got dressed up in their big day Sunday, okay? In their Sunday best. They took off their work clothes, put on their Sunday best, and went to watch the Jews be taken to the cattle cars to be taken off to be exterminated. Could you imagine that? They had such simcha.
They have it on film.
Such simcha.
The, it's in Poland?
Yeah. Where else was it?
Movies.
So, they didn't go, you could say, they didn't go take a bat and beat us up and spit on us. They didn't. They read in the kinnas. They spit on us, and then they made faces, and they said insulted. Quiet. They just put on their big day, Sunday, their best clothes, their Sunday best. That speaks volumes. It speaks. Yeah.
Didn't have feelings. My mother was hiding in the forest, and finally they caught her. Almost a month before the Russians came into the area. So they were parading her and her mother to the village. And a village, the first neighbor says, my mother was barefoot, says, you have nice boots. Would you give me your boots? Because anyway, they kill you. So they didn't have a feeling for it at all.
And this is in Poland, right?
That was in Hungary.
Hungary. Okay. Unbelievable. Yeah.
There's an idea in war. Somebody commits a crime, and the law enforcement gets you, and then let's say you get convicted. But if there's a defense of entrapment, if the law enforcement goes too far and they set you up, then you can be found innocent by reason of entrapment. So sometimes
it goes both ways.
Yeah,
it goes both ways. Okay. But this is what it says over here. That's really all that is hidden. It really is alluded to in the words over here in this passage. The reason why the Tzafani is guilty, all of the Rishama are guilty, the defense that they claim is that, listen, we are doing Hashem's will. Hashem, the Jewish people have sinned. They have to be punished. So we're nothing more than agents of Hashem to bring about His will. Okay, that may be true, but why did you have to get dressed in your Sunday best? That was not necessary. And the fact that you did so indicates that you did not do this because you felt you were doing God's will. You did this because you enjoyed it. You have a hatred. And therefore, you will be punished for everything that you have done. And that's all hinted to in the words, ki higdil lasos. You've done too much. Gadol. What? Mr. Q, you may turn it up, turn it 180 degrees. Even if we can't hear, because this is impossible. Okay. Oh, 180 degrees. Good, let's see, okay. I'll put up a little bit of, maybe we'll stop the feedback. Is it a little better now? I think it's a little better now, no?
Yeah.
It's the feedback. What is the feedback? Okay, yeah, okay. Okay, whatever it is, yeah.
You also see that the nations we just kind of they have this attitude
towards Jews. Jews, it's extra special.
How do I know that?
Extra special. There's been a lot of studies. It's not the same. It's not in Africa. I read a lot about this. Okay, talking about the gypsies, Nazis, the gypsies, and Darfur. In a lot of these, a lot of genocide. Okay, you know, you're asking very good. This has been discussed quite a bit. There's a lot of stuff on this. You have to go online and look for the right articles. And the best stuff you should know is not online. The best stuff, you're not going to find the best stuff online. You have to know where to look. But this is a big topic of discussion. Why do we consider ourselves, if you want to be critical, why do we, you know, we always talk about that there's no nation in the world that's as hated and they wanted to destroy us. Other nations were also decimated. But when you, the more you study, this is what it says. I don't claim in any way to know very much about anything, but the little that I've read is the more you study, the more you see that when other nations were decimated, when they called genocide, it wasn't for the purpose of wiping out a race. It was
the final solution was only for the Jews. Final solution.
There was a threat. There was land. There was an issue, and because of the issue, the more powerful nation decided to do extreme things because they want their land. They have land. They want the land. They have assets. Or they don't like them. There's an ongoing hatred that's been brewing for years. By Klal Yisrael, we find that when the Ummah Olam attempted to destroy us, it's their goal is l'chu v'nachi game v'nachi deim v'lo yizocher shem Yisrael o. That exactly captures the entire focus of hatred. It's different. It's not because we have land, they want Eretz Yisrael. It's not about that. If we would give the Palestinians the whole Eretz Yisrael, right, you could have it. You could have, we're all leaving, we're all going to go, who knows where we're going to go. It wouldn't make a difference. It wouldn't make a difference. They would not be happy. Right. They would still come to kill us. And the Ummah Yisrael would still hate us. Well, you think we're going to solve all the problems of the apartheid?
Well, okay. The proof is, because before there was an Eretz Yisrael,
for 2,000 years, they were trying to kill us.
In every nation.
We were expelled from every country in the world. Straight down the line. Every country in the world threw us out. Every country in the world, they issued unfair laws and taxation for grums, blood libels, you name it. So it's not about the land. It's not because today, that's an excuse, because today you have to be politically correct. So you have to hide the hatred you have for a Jew in the skies. Oh, because you're in violation of human rights. You don't treat women well. You live in an occupied land. It's nonsense. That's not what it's about. It's because they hate us. Why do they hate us? Chazal tell us, because they stood with us at Har Sinai. Sinai is Miloshen Sina. Hatred, the jealousy that we were makabel the Torah and they were not. They did not have the moral fortitude to they offer the Torah, or at least they were offered a chelik in the Torah. A lot of the mafarshim say when it says that Hashem went to all the nations of the world and offered them the Torah, does not necessarily mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm giving you the opportunity to have taryag mitzvahs. Hashem does not bring upon a person a nesoyin that he cannot handle. How do you know that, by the way? I finally found the makar for that. How do you know that? How do you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not bring upon you a nesoyin that you cannot handle?
It's like every...
What?
What?
What? He doesn't agree.
The Reisman doesn't agree.
So
I take that back. I take because I got a lot of criticism saying that. Reisman doesn't agree with that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not give you an assoyim that you cannot handle.
100%.
Where's Chazal? There's no Chazal. No such thing. It's a saying. Right. Where does it say this? There is no Makar. I have a Makar for you, though.
You're not handling it too well.
There's no Makar. There's no. The Oilam says, you find me a Makar for this. The
Oilam. There was a Makar for this.
What? What?
I thought the whole idea of Avraham Avinu bringing Yitzchak, that was the Makar. He wouldn't have him done it. He couldn't have done it. He wouldn't have told him to kill Yitzchak.
First of all, Chazal clearly says Hashem didn't force him to do it. Hashem said, "Kach no, ein no el lo shoyn bakasha." If you want to do it, you'll get credit. Ein mitzvah v'yosef. The akeda was a get. That's an incredible chiddush. The akeda is an einoy mitzvah v'yosef. This mitzvah v'yosef is greater than einoy mitzvah v'yosef. Our Rebbe was not commanded to bring Yitzhak to the Akedah. If you want to, do it. What?
If he would have gone through with it, he would have been guilty?
No, if he would have gone through it, no, what are you saying? What are you saying? I'm saying that if he would have not have gone through with it, not. Let's say Hashem said, Avram, kachmas bin chas yichid chasher haftas Yitzhak v'lech l'eretz amir v'ha'aleyu sham l'oila l'achad ha'or ma'asher amari l'acha. And Avram says, Hashem, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I can't, I'm sorry. Hashem says, it's fine, no problem, everything, let's go weiter. Everything, business is you. We would not have the zechus today, we would be lacking. But would Avraham be any less today than our eyes, than going through with the Akedah? No. We wouldn't have the zechus. The whole Rosh Hashanah is all built on the zechus, zechor bris Avraham. But Hashem did not tell him, you must do it. Chazal say, kach no. Ain no ella l'shoin bakasha. I'm making a request. The word no has a connotation. This is my preference. But I'm not holding you accountable. You don't have to do it. Chazal say, ain adoyme, one who is mitzuve v'oise, l'mi she'enoi mitzuve v'oise. The Holocaust, or the Crusades, was a geder in a degree. Okay, this is scary what I'm saying now, okay? You maybe you'll tell me I'm not because chas shalom, but I feel something worse, so don't worry. what people have done throughout the Doiros in a certain degree is even greater than Avraham Avinu. Because we are mitzvah v'yoseh. You mitzvah to give up your life. You were obligated to give up your life al kiddush Hashem. Avodah zarah, shvichas damim, gil yarayos. We were given the Torah and we have an obligation to give up our lives for these three. So the people who gave up their lives during the first crusade when they were presented with the choice of converting to Avodah Zarah, or becoming being Maminim in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were mitzvah the onset to do this. Therefore, their sacrifice, to a degree, is greater than Avraham Avinu, who was enoy mitzvah the onset. However, here's the catch. The catch is if Avraham Avinu would not have done this, then there's no way in the world the people, all of these great people, would have been able to do it. Begeder mitzvah v'oseh. Chazal clearly say, how does a Jew have this ability, this incredible supernatural ability to give up his life l'shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How could it's only because Avraham Avinu, he put it in us. It's his. He was oymed in the nesayin for the first time. He brought about a koyach and klal Yisrael to do something like this. But mitzad sheni, we have won over him. Because we are mitzvah v'yoseh, and he was enoi mitzvah v'yoseh, and eni doimim misha hu mitzvah v'yoseh, and misha eni mitzvah v'yoseh. So it's a very interesting partnership. We only have the koyach to do it because of Avraham Avinu, but yet when we do it, when we have done it in history, it's even greater than Avraham Avinu.
What about this question?
That's a very controversial thing I just told you right now. I hope you realize not everyone's going to take that lightly, what I just told you, okay?
Another catch to what you're saying. During World War II, it could be during the
yes.
Different, the Yidden had no choice.
Right. They had no choice.
But I think during the crusade,
they did. See, that's what people say. I used to say this also myself. I used to say that to everyone you read very often you read about the crusades, and especially Tisha B'Av, all the Tisha B'Av Svarim, they will tell you. I used to say this also all the time, is that the crusades was the beginning of the Shorashim of the Holocaust was the first crusade. It's definitely true. There's no question. There are definitely numerous parallels between the two. There's no question about it. However, there is one very important difference between the two, and that is in the Crusades, they had a choice. By and large, not every situation, but by and large, if a Jew said, I'm willing to convert to Christianity, they let him live.
Yeah, true, but not always.
Not always, right. Not always, right. Right. Not always, right. I agree, not always, but by and large, Ruba de Ruba, if it was clear to the Crusaders that the Jews were willing to convert, fine, you can live. We have won. In the Holocaust, it didn't make one bit of a difference. If you were a Jew, even if your mother was a non-Jew and your father was Jewish, going back a few generations, that's it.
25%.
You don't have a chance. You don't have a chance. It was. Now that does not take away one mashu. Don't get me wrong. It does not take away one mashu from the kiddush shem shemayim. That they died because they were Jewish. The Zehu, that you're a Kaddosh. Just because you were not given a choice doesn't make much of a difference. But however, when we compare different Tukufas in history and what we learn from them, you have to acknowledge that there is a difference. There are major similarities between the First Crusade and the Holocaust, but there is this still very fundamental difference. Doesn't take away from the greatness, and we can't even begin to fathom what it was, who these people of the Holocaust were. I mean, Chas v'Shalom, coming to minimize even a mashu sheba mashu. But we have to acknowledge there are differences. Yeah.
I just wanted to add one thing. This Rabbi Jewish school.
Yes.
The Lach B'Shalas that came, the Jews that did convert.
Yes.
The B'Shalas, if they wanted to come back, would they accept it? You write the whole Shalas. Some Rishonim said they did not want to.
The Ramah, right. When we learned it on the Yard side of the Ramah, we discussed this.
Right.
And the Ramah was one of the biggest defenders of the people who converted, to take that it should be taken back. He was on one side, and everyone else of many of the Rabbanim disagreed with him. They felt the people who abandoned Yadus and now came back should not be accepted into the community. And the Ramah said no. The Ramah said, don't judge them. It's not for you to judge. It's for Hashem to judge. They want to come back. You take them back with open arms. And that was one of the legacy of the Ramah. He strongly defended the people who wanted to come back. They should be accepted fully. I don't know to the degree that they should become the Baal Musaf on Yom Kippurim. That's another thing. You know, the first one was the Baal Musaf on Yom Kippur. And now he wants to come back and be a Baal Musaf. Be again the Baal Musaf. I don't know to that degree. I don't really know. But to come back into the community and to be accepted, be part of the members of the community, again, Aliyah and full services, absolutely. He defended these people. He told the community, don't judge them. You have no right to be the judge. They want to come back. And on Tisha B'Av, I was listening to Rabbi Glatstein from Cedarhurst. So he said an unbelievable, fascinating story. I never heard the story that in World War II, the chief rabbi of Rome, I know, unbelievable story, is that he had, now he's talking about a very, very touchy, very controversial topic.
Yes.
About Rabbanim who offered the opportunity to run away. Okay, like a lot of...
Who was offered an opportunity?
Rabbanim. He was talking in general about the topic that during World War II, there were opportunities to save yourself.
Sure.
And often, the Rabbanim were given tickets, were given visas, but their kehilos were not. And it meant that the Rav would have to abandon their kehila to save their own skin. He says, yeah, I can't say that term. I thought it was not. To save their own skin. And now I'm saying that to save themselves and abandon their kehila. So some Rabbanim did not. Many Rabbanim said, I cannot abandon my flock. A ship, a captain does not abandon the ship. And he mentioned Rabbi Chaim Wasserman, who already was in America. And he went back to die with his people. And then there were Rabbanim who did not, who were away from their people, and they did not go back, And they were Rabbanim who mamish abandoned their people. They mamish got a ticket and they will pick themselves up and they abandoned their balabatim and they ran away. What? And he didn't go that far to say. And he basically he didn't say that. I know he was discussing. He was very fascinating. He was discussing different decisions. And basically, he was saying is you no one should chas v'shalom judge. Every situation is so different. And also, you have to understand the relationship between rabbanim and balabatim. It's every relationship, every situation. Many times, more often than not, the relationships between the balabatim and the rabbanim are very different in different types of communities. The expectations and what is proper, what's not proper, it's something which you have to be very careful. Not like Rav Ramah said, don't be so quick to stand in the place of Hashem to pass judgment on different situations. You don't understand. There's another side to the story, and it's just not for us to go there. He said over the story that the chief rabbi of Rome, he abandoned his flock. He had an opportunity to escape, and he escaped. He went. He hid in the church or in the home of the bishop. I don't know. There was someone in the church that was willing to save him, and he saved him. And then, when the war was over, he came back to his community, and the balabatim said to him, the survivors, whoever survived, said to him, "What are you doing here? I'm the rabbi. Not anymore. You abandoned us. You abandoned us." In an ace tzara, you just had an opportunity, you ran away to save yourself. You're not coming back. We're not accepting you back as the Rav here. And they refused to allow him to continue to serve as the Rav of the community because he abandoned them during this trying time.
According to the way I know, he didn't abandon them, but at the end, he did convert.
Okay, this is how he said the story. I don't know. Maybe you're right. This is how he said the story in front of the Olam. That's how he said that he abandoned this balabatim. He did abandon. You have to check out the story. I don't know. Maybe you're right. This is what he said. I'm just saying what he said. I'm just telling you. Ish mipish. He abandoned this balabatim. He came back and they said to him, "No way. We're not taking you back because of what you've done." And then he converted to Christianity. And I guess in the next generation, I guess his children, they married goyim. So his grandchildren were. Great grandchildren halachically are goyim, not Jewish. He converted whatever it was. It resulted in, I guess, in two generations where his children. I guess he had a son who married a shiksa and had children. It resulted down the line.
Doesn't make a difference if you converted or not.
Right, he's a Jew. There's no such thing as a Jew converting. There's no such a halachic such thing. If a Jew is baptized, it go take a bath. Big deal. What does it mean? It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. But what it means is he adapted a lifestyle. He embraced the lifestyle of the Christians, which means he went to church and this. And Mela, he married. He already probably was married. But if his children, he raised his children to be goyim, and his children married goyim. So if his children's sons married non-Jewish girls, that means that his grandchildren are goyim, halachically are not Jewish, and maybe the grandchildren as well. And now his granddaughter or great-granddaughter, Hayoim, very recently converted to Judaism, converted back to Judaism. So, you know, it's interesting. You can't judge. I know of a person. It's very interesting who is a convert. Okay, and I always thought not from this community. So he's out of town. I go to Boston. So someone introduced me to this person. I saw him a few times. I knew about him a little bit. And his father is Jewish. His father is Jewish, and his mother is not Jewish. So I always thought, and he's a ger. He converts. I always thought, why did he convert? The Pintaliyit, right? Since the father is Jewish, so he has Jewish blood. So the Jewish blood was bubbling inside of him. I got to go back to my roots. My mother's not Jewish, so somehow it percolated and it broke forth. He converted. One thing led to another. I met the when I go there. So I met the father many times. The father of this guy there in Boston. In my eyes, is like nothing. There's no lachluchas. Zia, the father of the convert, he's Jewish. Like nothing, no lach, grandfather. You know, there must be some Yiddish blood somewhere. Which, okay, so I figure if I knew it, it percolated. Then one time I came, he made a simcha, and his mother came. And the mother, the mother of the ger. And the mother of the ger, I was so impressed with her. She's a shiksa, she is so religious. She is so spiritual, so sincere. And then I said, wow, the reason why this guy is Jewish is not because of the father. I thought it was the Pintle Yid, you know, the father would somehow... No, it's clear as day. It's clear as day. The reason why he's Jewish, he converted, is the spirituality of the mother penetrated him. And being that his father's blood is Jewish, so it was a good shidduch he became.
No, I don't think it would have mattered if the father was not Jewish. If the person is spiritual and is seeking truth,
right. It can come back. Okay, but he could have become a Christian. I mean, he become religious in other ways. He become religious, he become a Christian, he'd become a Muslim, he become who knows what. It was an eye opener for me because I was brought up to the Pintle Yid. It's there. It percolated mushrooms and blossoms, and then you have these Balei Tshuva, and maybe that's really what happened over here. But after meeting knowing the father, seeing the father all the time, was I'm telling you, there's no lach luchas, and then meeting the mother, wow, what an eye opener! It has to be at least. It's the spirituality. She's totally whatever. She's not Jewish at all. Her ideas are very strange, in fact. But you see the spirituality, and that's definitely what brought this person. I don't know for sure, but it definitely opened him up, with being that he's Jewish also from the father's side, to become a ger. Very, very interesting. Okay.
Exactly. According to Outreach Judaism, he did abandon his flock.
He did abandon his flock.
Yeah.
Okay. You got to Google it, the mayor.
I Googled it.
I read the book later.
He abandoned his flock and they wouldn't take him back.
Because a lot of Jews in Rome were saved by the church because they let him hide in the churches.
That's what he did, this person.
And they had a tremendous old library. And
it was a very vicious argument. There was a list of all the Jews. There were no computers. It was a written list of all the Jews. And the Germans got that list. And there was a very big fight between the president of the shul and the Rav. The president of the shul said the Rav gave the list over, and the Rav said the president gave it over. And this part of this whole...
Terrible.
Thing about it.
Terrible, terrible.
That's which the heritage, how plays in. There is a film, like a 40-minute film, two parts, the Jews of Spain, and one part of it is the Jews of Palma de Mallorca. They were converted like 300 years ago. And that's a lot of them. They are separated, nobody accepts them, but they are very devoted Christians. But in there was an episode, like in 1967, the war in Israel, all of them, the whole community came together, they were so uplifted, and all others around them also congratulated them. So they had this still in them after 300 years, that's a connection to
it's still there.
Yeah,
there's no question. The Pintle Yid is always there. There's no question. I'm not denying that.
Okay,
let's go by. Let's see over here. Let's see the Radak. Let's see the Radak Pasik Chaf. Pasik Chaf the Radak Vesat Svani here. Okay. Okay, so again, we discussed over here this idea. Ki hit lasais. The idea based on that the Yetzer Hara has done magnificent things and has gone way, way too far. Let's see the Radak Pasik Chaf. Yes, page 239. V'yes ha-tzefoni archek me'aleichem, v'tzefoni I will distance from upon you, ha-arbe karo tzefoni shebo lochem mipa'as tzefoin, pshuta shol nikra, these two parakim are discussing in detail, the arbe will come from the north, v'idachtiv, I will banish the arbe, el eretz tzia ushmama, v'sham yomus, v'shelo yimtso ma yoichal, l'fichach, and it will not be found, v'atid l'fichach v'yol l'vashay espanav, its stench will come up as part of Al Hayam Akadmoini, Perush, Hamizrahi on the east side, Vahu Yom Kineris, Oi Yom HaMelach. Shehem Lemizrach Eretz Yisrael v'Seifa Al Yom HaAchron Hayom HaMaravi V'Hu Shakor Yisrael B'Torah Hayom HaGadol B'Mediterranean Shehu L'Marav Eretz Yisrael Panav Retzu Leimar Reishai Kol Kachoyah Rav Chel Ha'arbe Shai Machzik Miyom Liyom Miyom HaMizrachi Layom HaRavi. What's the distance in miles? I want to do this. It's not so big. 50 miles? 80 miles? Something like that, between 50 and 80 miles. I forgot exactly the distance from the Mediterranean until the Yarden. The whole width of Eretz Yisrael today is teeny and compared to 50, something like that. 50 miles. Fine. What is the width of Eretz Yisrael from the Mediterranean to the Yam HaMelech? What is the distance in miles?
But it's a little wider. Yam HaMelech is a little wider.
The distance in miles from the Mediterranean? From the Mediterranean?
Until the
Dead Sea, to the Yam HaMelech. It's something like 50, 60 miles. Maybe it's 80 miles somewhere. The widest part of Eretz Yisrael is 80 miles. Okay, so in an airplane you can fly over that in 20 minutes probably, right? Maybe 10 minutes. What? 600 miles an hour. Okay, and an F-35, you know how fast? F-35, you go in the fighter jet, you can fly over the whole... What?
We knocked out a Syrian plane.
Coming over the border. What, today?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't read the news yet. Okay, wow. Scary. The Ola Vashoi, and its stench will ascend ha Aleph B'Shvah. Okay, this is an unusual Vashoi. The Aleph is silent. The Aleph is a Shvah. Levadoi, V'sal Tzachanasa, Kofal Ingin B'Mila Shainos, Ki Tzachanasa, Kimoy Vashoi. These two words mean exactly the same thing. V'tam Ho Aliyah. Shayalu, what's the Ali? What does it mean over here? The reason that it's going to ascend. What is that all about? Shayale Rechom Horalia Pecho Ivrim, the stench will ascend into the nostrils of those who pass in the land. Ki Higdil La'asois. Ha'arbe Higdil La'asois Rabba Oretz, Vohakel Yisparach Richem Ala Oretz, Vehe Hemiso Hashem. At this point, has Rachmonos on the people of the land, and Hashem is now bringing about the death. I forgot to tell you what I was telling you. I got sidetracked. I was telling you that, how do you know the Makar, this idea of that Hashem does not bring a nisoyon upon a person that he cannot handle. So I told a Reisman, so people criticized me, that's not what Reisman said. I don't know, I was at the shiur. Really, I know what he said. Don't tell me, I was there, what he said. I heard what he said. But okay, that's a controversial thing. Does Hashem bring upon a person a nisoyon that he cannot handle? The Olam says this expression, and if it's true, I have a makar for you. The makar is what we say every single day in Ashrei. In the middle of Ashrei, we say the pasuk, Tzadik Hashem b'chol derachav v'chassid b'chol masav. That pasuk is one of the main sukkim of Tzidduk Hadin. A person acknowledges his matzdik olav es hadin. He acknowledges that the suffering that he endures is correct. It's correct. A person, people suffer all different types of sufferings in this world, and a person has an obligation to say, Mat Tzidduk HaDin. At a cemetery, Rahman Litzlan, before the person is buried, there's Tzidduk HaDin. 14 expressions of Tzidduk HaDin. So that one, it's Tzadik Hashem Chol Derachav. In Ashrei, before you say Tzadik Hashem Chol Derachav, you read the Pasuk, Poseach Es Yodecha, Hashem opens up his hand, Umaspia, and gives, he satisfies, Umaspia l'chol chai, every living creature, Ratzon. What does it mean, Ratzon? The will to move on. Ratzon means, doesn't mean Hashem gives you whatever you want. We know that's not true. A person does not get whatever he wants. Hashem gives humanity the ability to go forward in life despite the pain and tsar that one endures in his existence. That pasuk was strategically positioned before Tzidduk HaDin. Because if a person is confronted with din, with harshness, with very difficult times in life, who says he has the ability to say to Hashem, Tzadik Hashem b'chol derachav? When a person is saying Tzadik Hashem b'chol derachav, obviously he says, I accept it. Hashem, you're correct. It's difficult. It's painful. I accept it. I acknowledge there's a reason for it. I don't understand. It's beyond me, but I have a munah. And I'm willing to go forward, and I'm willing to say to you, Hashem, that you're a tzaddik. You only can do that if you have the will to do so. So not everyone, so the pasuk before says, Hashem gives you that koyach. The ability to want to live, want to move on, want to continue, to be able to endure the difficulties in life. So before Hashem brings upon a person the need for him to say, Sadek Hashem Chol Derachav, Hashem first gives him the degree of Ratzon that he needs to get to the next step.
And what if you're not at that level, you should not say the Pasuk?
If you're saying the Pasuk, it means you're at that level. How do you like that?
So what if you're not at that level?
Then you wouldn't, if the fact, if you're saying the Pasuk, it means you're at that level. That's what, there's no two ways about it.
We daven, we're in.
When you daven, you're in. Lip service is always, lip service is 90% of davening.
So what does your counterpart say?
I didn't ask him yet, Reisman. I didn't ask him. He'll tell me it's drush. It's drush. It's not halacha. You need a solid halachic source. Rabbi Reisman is an ish ha-halacha. That's a very big koyach. He knows halacha. He knows how to be mavel between halacha and drush. That's one of his big arguments on Tchelis. He's one of the biggest critics in the world on Tchelis. On the Murex. On the Murex, the Murex Trunculus. Is because he says all of their rayos come from Divrei Agada.
What about Atzir Kam Pala?
That's also a pasuk. Fine. What?
It's in the Torah. It's not in the Tehillim.
Okay, but it's a makar. Pasuk in Tehillim is also a makar. It's not as strong as what it says in the Torah, but I think it's a very solid idea. The juxtaposition of these two psukim. First comes Paseh Hashem, opens up his and he gives you the ratzon you need to go on. After Hashem gives you that ability and your level, what you need, then Hashem brings upon the person what he needs to do, which is painful, and the person has to say, "Tzadik Hashem b'chol derachav v'chasi b'chol ma'asav." But it's only before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you within you the ability to do so. The ratzayim, they go together, and everyone is different. Hashem doesn't give every person the same ratzayim. Hashem doesn't give everyone the same nisyonos. So I think it's a good source for this. The Olam says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not bring upon a person the sin unless he can handle.
What does he say?
I went to Mitzvah Shabbos. It was after Shavuos. It was about 20 people in the room, and he said it's gonna be very controversial. And he said the Olam says this thing that Hashem only gives you in a so much you can handle. And he went to show that he really believes personally that this is not true. A person to say such a thing, you're limiting a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not hostage to your hasagas. Hashem can do whatever he wants to do, whether you like it or not. And he's right in a way, because look at how many people cannot handle the nisyonos and they go off. Look at the Holocaust.
He gives little kids challenges that they can handle?
What? No, obviously they can't handle. Look at the Holocaust. Probably the majority of the people who survived the Holocaust did not remain from. I don't know the numbers, but people who came from backgrounds and they survived, I don't know the numbers, but how many of them remained from? I don't know. Obviously, but a lot of them did not. So why not? They had an asayon, so they couldn't handle it. Could you blame them? No way in the world.
How?
Exactly. So what he's saying is very true. He's saying that was his idea, and he had sources. Rabbi Reisman is an ish halacha. If you want to prove something to him, you have to have a halachic source to bring a source to an idea from an agada. What I just told you. It's not a source. That's just a nice thing. It's the two sigma juxtaposed, and it seems to indicate that Hashem will not give you nisan unless you can handle. It's a drush. It's not a halachic source, so he can easily dismiss what I said without a blink of an eye.
First of all, you have to define what it means handling it. That's number one. Number two, it doesn't mean that you couldn't handle it. You chose not to handle it.
Okay.
You
okay.
You chose to do something. God. In other words, if you want to say it on one end, say you could handle God. Gave you the ability to handle it, but you decided that
not to. You don't want to handle it. Okay.
You're not going to go and push yourself to handle it. I mean, maybe.
All right. All right, so
when you take Avraham Avinu, you take the two pro and con. Which side are we going to look at? Rav Moshe Meirweiss, by the way, believes Hashem does not give you more.
The whole world says this. This is
so which side did Hashem say, Avraham Avinu, I'm giving you what you can handle? Or do you say no? I'm giving you more.
I don't know what the answer. You have to take into consideration, and it says in the word no. You have to take into consideration. So Avraham Avinu was different. Avraham Avinu was the Av HaMaminim. he's the beginning, and you have to also take into consideration that it says the word no. Chazal make this drasha. Ein no ella l'shoin bakash. The Sfas Emes says beferish. He says Avraham Avinu was not mitzvah to do the akedah. It says no, no is rishus. If you want to do it, yes. Yitzchak. So Yitzchak. Good question. I'm thinking that. What's the answer? Is did Yitzchak have a choice? Was he mitzvah Yosef?
Look. No, the Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses it in a whole block Gemara that Yitzchak. How come the Gemara asked the question? How come Yitzchak didn't say when his father said to lay down on the Akedah, you're going to be the carbon, and Yitzchak should have said, it's been nice knowing you, thank you, goodbye, have a nice life, I'm leaving. And what gave Yitzchak the right to listen?
The right to listen.
Brought him up to
human
say
sacrifice.
The difference between us and them is they have human sacrifices, we don't. So now you're telling me to lay down?
So they say,
goodbye.
What is the common?
What? So
he believed that he heard Hashem say.
Felt he was allowed to listen to his father.
Well,
it
is
that shame.
Mutcham Kalmo is the first in the Torah. That's a problem. Mutcham,
the
Novi, human sacrifice is connected called Torah Kula. So how do you balance the Mutchachamim when it's connected called Torah Kula? Yeah, it's true. We think it's true, 100%. But it's still a difficulty because of what would tell you to do to connect what it says in the Torah. You can't listen. Unless you're a Novi. And Navi is different.
Avram was a Navi. He said, I heard from Hashem.
Yeah, that's the answer. But it's, so we have to establish yourself as a Navi.
So
this is very esoteric. Okay, let's go back to our discussion. Next. Now let's go to the first paragraph. The first paragraph of here is Varasim Zal. We are up to, over here, Varasim Zal. Again, on page 239 in the Radak, we're up to the last paragraph in the Radak. Rabbi Seinu Perishu Zeh Pasuk Limos HaMashiach. This, I'm reading now in the Radak. We're up to where we're up to. Rabbi Seinu Zal. Okay, page 239. Radak. It's where the words are long, the lines are wide. It's the last paragraph. Rabbi Seinu Zal Perishu Zeh Pasuk Limos HaMashiach. Referring to HaMashiach, V'yamir Es HaTzifoni Archik Me'alechem Zeh Yetzer Hora Shetzofun, which is hidden, the Omid Beliba Shal Adam, what Rashi said, Vidachtiv El Eret Sia Vishmama, Lemakam Shain Bene Adam Mitsuyum Shliskarois Bohen. I will drive it to a place where the Yetzer will have an opportunity to go and cause harm to human beings. As part of El Yom HaKadmoni, Shanasan Einav Bamikdash Harushim Yachariva, this is what, who said we had this before? Someone said this before, and I think the Chaim HaSanachi referred to this. V'yachirivay, V'soiv El Yom HaKadmoni, Shanasan Einav Bamikdash Shaini, V'yachirivay, V'horag Talmidei Chachamim Shaboy. That's a euphemism for Klal Yisrael. What is the meaning of the Kihigdil La'asois? So Chazal Darshan is that it focuses its attention on Talmidei Chachamim. On Talmidei Chachamim. The Yetzirah. A Talmud Chacham has a much greater Yetzer Hara than an ordinary person. Kol ha-gadol me-chaveira, Yitzroi gadol he-menu. What he's saying over here is that it's an interesting idea is that the Yetzer Hara has limited resources. And he has to focus attention to get to get a bang for his buck. Get a bang for his buck, and therefore he focuses specifically on. That's what it means. Let's say, he higdil asos. You should spread yourself out even. Everyone should have the same, relatively speaking, the same nisyonos. But that's not the nature of the Yetzer Hara. He abandons the ordinary people. He lets them get by, and he devotes his full attention to attack talmidei chachamim. Okay, let's see the Malbim. What? I don't know what it means. He wants to say it means he call a gadol me chaveroi yitzroi gadol hemen. Chazal say. Yeah. What do you mean?
In other words, the shaykhid of a town.
Yeah.
And he has a shayla, and he doesn't ask the shayla. He has a shayla. lets it go.
The whole town is nichshol. He gets a bang for his buck.
One person.
So Talmidei Chacham, they represent the Tzibur. And if they go and they teach apikorsis, they make mistakes which lead the people the wrong way, people learn from them. So by causing a Talmud Chacham to be nichshol, you gain, the Yetzirah gains, that he causes the masses to be nichshol. Because the Tzibur is totally in the hadracha of the Talmidei Chachamim. Okay, it's very, very true. It's very, very dangerous. It's a very dangerous thing. Talmidei Chacham, a very big achrayis to the Tzibur. What? Because we're the ordinary people, doesn't make a difference. No one's watching us. Especially today's day and age, today, everything you do today is online. The cameras are clicking, the videos are going. Any statement you make, you get into trouble. 1, 2, 3. People learn from it. People who want to follow, whatever. We all understand. Let's see the Malbim. The Malbim, the Pasuk Chaf. V'yes HaTzafayni. Now, this is really a continuation of the previous Pasuk, which we learned over here, what it says, Shem Hoya HaTeshua. Bavur Shemoy, Lohoya Marchik Esarbe, Kadesh Shehiyah. This goes back to his theme that the request that the Kohanim were making of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there were three different requests. Have Rachmanis upon the land, have Rachmanis upon your people, and have Rachmanis upon yourself, Hashem. Because if there is a famine in the land, it's a Chilul Hashem. People, the world says, how come Hashem, the God of the Jews, cannot provide for them sustenance? So it's a triple chilul, triple problem. Each one of these things is a reason in and of itself for HaKadosh Baruch Hu have Rachmanis. So he's going back to that idea, and he explains here, She'im hoya teshua, if the salvation comes, bavur shemoi, because Hashem has Rachmanis upon his own name, lo hoya marchik eso arbe kidei she'iye muchon korov aleihem, if that would be the case, then the salvation would be that the Arbe would not die. The Arbe would remain alive. They would just temporarily move, distance themselves into another land. But be on standby. Any moment, they can come back and destroy the land once again. If the only reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to save the land is for his own sake, his own Chil Hashem, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need to obliterate the Arba. It will be sufficient to have the Arba remain alive. And V'rachamav al kol masav, Hashem has Rachmanis to all of his creatures. Why should the Arba have to suffer? The Arba will just move along into the desert, into a place where they're not going to cause harm to the land. Aval, but now, ato marchik ameleichem es Arba shebo mitzafayin, I'm going to distance it. She'im, Hashem would send it upon the nations. Hashem would send it to other nations to punish them, to exact vengeance for his name. Asher bazu, hichrati goyim, amarti ach tiri oisi tichi musur. Okay, this is something the Chavos Chaim always talks about, is that anything which happens in the world is only b'shvil Yisrael. It's this pasuk. Any event that happens in the world, it's for us to learn from, to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the kol yachol. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can bring korban upon the world whenever he wants, and if we do not behave, it can happen to us. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the only reason why he's taking the Arba out of Eretz Yisrael is for his own honor. It would be more advantageous to Hashem to send the Arba upon a nation that does Averos, and let them suffer, and we will observe and learn Musar from what happened. But that's not what happened in this case. Loi chayn ato shasisi lemanchem. It's a beautiful perush of the pasuk. Hashem says, but you know what's going to happen? I want to show you that the reason why the Arbe will leave is because I have rachmonis on you, on the people. Therefore, adiach oisail eretz siyavu shumama, esponov, its face, mitzayir oisoki hispashet b'chol oretz miyom v'yad yom, v'hoya mahalcho mimarov l'mizroch, uchshonifsuko ha'gzerul nischalik l'shnayim v'yisa achet mimenu shoma b'mizroch, shizeh korponov, elim akadmoni v'yamizroch, v'sofa yisa el yom achon hamaravi. He's not really explaining, all that much over here, but we have to really add a lot more perush into his words. But the basic idea over here is saying that the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu brought about the Arbe, the end of the Arbe, by having it sink, having it be destroyed in the Yam, in the east and the west, he's showing us that I'm having rachmanis upon you. I love you, and therefore it's, the sorrow will come to an end. I don't have clarity why this is so. Maybe you can explain this to me why this is so. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have brought an end to the tzara by having the Arab remain alive and go to another nation, that has the flavor of Hashem making a statement, it's for the sake of my honor. My honor, and the way it's for my honor, I guess he means to say is, I'm going to get honor no matter what. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when there's a need for Hashem to receive honor, it has to be fulfilled one way or another. There's no way the honor cannot come to be. It was meant to come by bringing punishment to Klal Yisrael. When Klal Yisrael is punished, there's an honor. Hashem is showing that if you do an Avera, you get punished. That, to a degree, is the honor of Hashem. So if Klal Yisrael does Teshuvah, okay, so you're not going to be punished. But Hashem's honor still has to be brought forth in this world. So instead of the punishment coming to Klal Yisrael, it will come to the Ummah Yisraelah. But when the issue is not Hashem's honor, it's us, it's our punishment, it's the love just for us, and it's not related to Hashem's honor, then it's not necessary that the Arba be sent to another nation and another nation suffer so the world sees that there is retribution for doing Avera. That's not the issue. It's not about Hashem. It's about Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael needed to receive Musar. They got their Musar. They did Teshuvah. So now the Arba will die and sink into the Yam. The way the punishment is removed is an indication of the love Hashem has for Klal Yisrael, not that I'm just doing this for my own honor. Okay, I hope I'm being clear. There's a very famous bar that we say on the Nusach HaTzvila on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Usashuva usefila utzedaka ma'avirin es roya hagezera. I saw this in many svarim. What does it mean ma'avirin? Why doesn't it say mivatlin? Usashuva usefila utzedaka mivatlin. It's umefirin. It's mevatel, it cancels, it's mefir, it annuls. There are better words to use in describing the koyach of tshuva usfila utstak. Why the word ma'avirin? What? Why the roya? Because why is it the word? Just the word gzer itself is a bad word. Gzer is negative. I don't know the answer. I hear what you're saying. I don't know. Okay, but let's focus. I don't know the answer, but let's focus. See, that's another question. Let's focus on the word ma'avirin. So this is a very scary answer, which means we've passed this over. The tshuva utzila tzedaka ma'avirin means causes to pass over. To pass over the evil decree. Why cause to pass over? Cancel. Annul. There are better words.
Maybe so somebody else gets it.
Oh, that's the answer. So the answer is, exactly, it fits into this, is that sometimes, you know, it's a very frightening vart, and I never really understood, maybe this sheds more light on the vart, because we now introduce the covenant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's like, you know, you have a missile, that's flying, and there are coordinates. They plug into the guidance system of a missile, the GPS coordinates where the missile is supposed to land. And then as the missile is flying, the target moves. The target, the tank that it's aiming at, it moves. So what happens? So the computer recognizes that the target's no longer in the same position. So it immediately sends new coordinates to the missile to change its destination. Why instead of the target? What happens? Let me ask you. What happens if the tank is targeting a tank and the tank goes into a cave? And there's no way in the world this missile can blow up the cave. So now the missile is in motion and it sees that the tank is in the cave. $1 million missile. What's going to happen? It's going to try to go into the cave. It's going to miss because the cave is blocking it. It's going to blow up, and $1 million of good tax, hard-earned tax money down the drain. $1 million. It won't be the last either, okay? It won't. $10 million. of tax money. You know what? $10 million of tax money, you know that? You know you can do $10 million? Down the drain. So why don't you tell the missile, listen, the tank went into the cave. You're not going to succeed. So just go back home. Put the coordinates into the missile. Come back. Go back to the Ronald Reagan, the new Ronald Reagan ship, and just land on the ship. Right? Don't blow up the ship. Disarm, okay? Disarm. And just nice land, you know, come back with a parachute, land nice and easy, so we can save the taxpayers in America $10 million. Why don't we do that?
But we do it.
What?
Drones.
Drones can do that to some degree. But once the missile is launched, why don't we do that? It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. Once it's in motion, there's no way in the world you can change the coordinates and tell it to come back home and land nicely on the ship. It doesn't go like that. So to a degree, now this is, I never understood this, but by Hashem, why can't you say that by Hashem? If Hashem is shooting the missiles, Hashem can say to his missiles, listen, the guy there, he did tshuva. So Hashem says to the missile, no, forget it, come back onto the ship. So why can't I call the Baruch Hu when he sends a missile? So obviously, it doesn't always work like that. The way Hashem made the world, that's what it says in the Svarim, the way Hashem made the world is when Hashem dispatches a malach to bring out a gezerah ra, you cannot tell the malach to come back home. It has to fulfill its mission no matter what. And if we're the target, we're in a lot of trouble. But if we do teshuva, so in this very
scary,
it's a very scary concept. I mean, so if we do teshuva, it's not what the Malbim says. We now in the hall, no pressure of the Malbim. If we do teshuva, so Hashem sends new coordinates to the missile. Don't go and land on that person. The gzeir should go on someone else from the umois ha'olam.
That's not nice.
The answer is, well, they deserve it anyway. Okay, it's not like they don't do that. Hashem doesn't punish a person who does not deserve it. For whatever the reason was, there was a stay. In the meantime, Hashem was not going to punish them for whatever the reason is. But now that we have done teshuva and the gezerah must be fulfilled no matter what, mavirin, it passes from us and it goes. Shocking thing to say this. Now, what is so terrible about this var, the thing that we say is that when a person does an aveira, think about this. This is the most frightening part of the aveira. If a person, many people, we unfortunately, we think, oh, I'll do an aveira today, big deal. Yom Kippur, by the time Yom Kippur comes around, I'll do tshuva, I'll shakol, I'll say slicha, slach lanu, and then I won't be punished. Even if you're right, you do tshuva and you're not punished, the best is, okay, ma'avirin. It's not going to come on you, but it's going to come on someone. How could you live with yourself knowing that you are the cause of someone else suffering?
Why should I say I'm the cause? God's the cause. He sent the missile.
These are very, there are major hashkafic questions with what I'm saying to you. And that's why I always bothered me this. Ma'avirin esroya ha'gezera doesn't say mevatlin, mefirin. Instead of it coming to me, it's ma'avir goes some. Oh, it's not fair. And no, they deserve to be punished. They deserve it. Hashem doesn't punish for no reason. They deserve it. But for whatever the reason is, Hashem did not want to punish them now. Hashem was waiting for an appropriate time, whatever that time is. But because we did teshuvah, and it's been dispatched to punishment, and it cannot be sent back, it has to be fulfilled. So now, oh, they anyway deserve it. So now will be their time to get their punishment. It's still very unsettling for a person to feel, I am still the cause of a person who anyway deserved to be punished, should be punished earlier than he normally would because of me. So in the best scenario, you're still the cause of someone else's, partially to a degree, whatever this means, someone else's suffering.
What about if
you're always a woman? What do you mean? So I said, Hashem does not punish for no reason. If the missile's not going to land on us and it's going to be redirected to someone else, that person deserves it. Hashem has his reasons, his ways. So, but it was not sent for him though. Hashem was waiting for a time, a set time when it would come to that person. But because we did tshuva, and it's already in motion, so therefore, now Hashem will take advantage of that situation, and since that person anyway had to be punished, so now it will be redirected to him. It's a frightening concept. Why should that be so? Well, the Radak over here opens up a little bit of an understanding of how this works. It doesn't answer the question, but the Radak saying that a Kadosh Baruch Hu at times has to bring into this world his Hashem's honor. The honor of Hashem has to be brought forth in this world. When the honor of Hashem has to be brought forth in this world, it could happen to anyone. Anytime Rachman Ritzlan there is punishment, it forces a person to recognize that there are consequences for sin. We all believe that Hashem does not do anything for no reason. If something happens, there's a reason, because there's din. Hashem created the world together with Midas Hadin. There's Midas Harachamim, and there's Midas Hadin, and Midas cannot be ignored. And when din is served in this world, Hashem's name is glorified. It's hard for us to digest that, but the fact that we recognize that it's not a world of hefker, everything has a din v'cheshbon, Hashem's name is glorified. So if the reason for punishment and for reward is all based upon Hashem's honor, then this concept makes sense to a degree, because Hashem's honor has to be perceived in this world one way or another. If we are the sinners, so unfortunately, it's going to be Hashem's honor will be revealed through us when we suffer. If we do teshuva, then we don't have to be the ones who suffer. So then Hashem's honor will be brought forth into this world by other people, the Umos Olam, who are anyway deserving of punishment, and that's also will be Hashem's honor will be served in this world. But if the reward, the punishment and reward is not for Hashem's honor, a reason why Hashem is annulling the decree is because Hashem loves us. Hashem has nothing to do with me. It's not about my cover and my honor. It's because I'm concerned about you only. Then the missile doesn't have to go anywhere else. The missile can explode in no man's land, in the desert. Or the missile can return back safely where it came from. Then the rules, it does not have to deal with this idea of ma'avirin to be sent to a new location. It's mamish exactly what the Malbim is saying here with regard to the Arba. Over here we have the Arba. Hashem is saying, Arba, it's over. Arba is cancelled. And how are we going to cancel it? So the Malbim says we have different options. Option number one is, let it go to the Umos HaOlam. Let it go there. Option number two is, let it sink into the Yam. No one should be harmed. Let it disappear, be destroyed, no one should be harmed. What's the difference? The difference is, why am I recalling the Gezerah? Is it because of my honor, or is it because of my love for the person, for the intended recipient? If it's for Hashem's honor, Hashem's honor has to come forth no matter what. If Klal Yisrael, unfortunately, you are going to be the instruments in the world seeing my honor. You did teshuva. Or there was teshuva was done. I'm not going to do it. But my honor has to be revealed. Ma'avirin. So there's going to be some other unfortunate creature in this world that's going to be the instrument to bring forth Hashem's honor. And don't have any hashkafic issues. Why does he have to suffer? Hashem has his reasons. Everything that Hashem does is just. Tzadiku Hashem atzur tam and polo. But if the reason why Hashem is going to rescind his decree is because purely for the love of Klal Yisrael, for our love, no one has to be hurt. It's not Hashem's honor. Then the Arba can sink into the Yam HaMelech, the Yam HaGadol, and no one has to be hurt. The Malmum here is really explaining what's Rosh Hashanah all about. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah all about, it's Hashem's honor. The whole theme of Rosh Hashanah very much relates to the Malchus of Hashem, the Kvoid Hashem. So it's not so far-fetched why we say Usishuva, Usefila, Utsidaka, Ma'azirin Esroya HaGezerah. because Rosh Hashanah is the Malchus of Hashem, the Kavod Hashem. The Malbim says, if it's the Kavod Hashem, there's no need for the Arbet to die and stink and bring up a stench in the Yam HaMelech, the Yam HaGadol. The Kavod Hashem has to go on. Where will it go? To the Umay Sa'olam. And then when there will be Chorbin, and Klal Yisrael will see, wow, look at that, the Kavod Hashem will be revealed. That's really what Rosh Hashanah is all about. That's why it's Ma'avirin. But when it's not about the Kavod Hashem, it's about our honor, then no one has to get hurt. Okay, that's the idea for the Malbim.
Stop here. There's a Mita Tova that way also. If somebody's supposed to get reward, then Hashem. And he does not.
Chazal say it's not bottled. Mita Tova is Meruba, Mita Puran, it's never bottled. Once it's dispatched, you cannot stop no matter what. We have to get it.